If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the HP Podcast. I'm Ben, and with me here today are two of the most handsome men you've ever seen in your entire life, starting off with Brandon, the most glorious Ginger Duncan. Hello, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're looking mighty suave in your PlayStation hoodie.
Got
Japanese text. I've always been really jealous of that hoodie, specifically the hood. The hood of the hoodie.
High quality. Insert
Everything
coin.
Everything but the E. Just the hood. I'm really a fan of
the hoodie.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great little garment.
Garment?
Yeah.
Are you from the 1930s, yeah. My sir?
Is it not, Ben?
It is. I mean, it is a great
all
garment.
Pantaloons.
Yeah, put them together with your pantaloons. Sure. We've got ourselves a party.
You wouldn't even know if I was wearing pantaloons right now, boys. We were just talking about that earlier.
It's a little different than what we were talking about, but yeah, it's close. Can you imagine, like, Dave, hello, Dave, first of all, greetings to you, my friend.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Can you imagine being alive in the era where pantaloons were a thing and you had to wear them? Like, can you just imagine the self-respect you would lose for yourself?
But what is a pantaloon? Is it different than pants? Like, did they just have a different name for pants? Or
I mean, I think that's where they got the name for them. I'm going to look up pantaloons. On Google, what is the meaning of pantaloon? Close-fitting trousers, usually having straps passing under the instep and worn especially in the 19th century. They look rather tight. And then some of them are more fluffy and looks like pirates wore them. So, oh, God, that was a sexy pirate.
I didn't mean to see that. Sure. That's not where I thought you were going with that. I honestly thought you were going to say, like, wouldn't it be funny if you didn't realize I wasn't wearing pants? And then I'm like, all right, I'll be right back. And then my bare ass cheeks as I walk away.
It wouldn't be the wildest thing that's happened. That would be the wildest thing that's happened on the show, actually. People don't know what we did in the audio only days.
I know. They'll never know either.
They'll never know.
We have our secrets.
Basically, keep it secret. Keep it safe, I guess. Hulk Hogan says handsome Phantom Mania is running wild, Jack. That's true. Welcome on in, Hulk Hogan.
I was hoping he was going to show up today.
Yeah, he's around sometimes, you know. Hulk has a lot of extra spare time and money now that the Gawker thing is settled. I don't even know what happened with that. I'm just talking. But this is the HP Podcast. We talk about video games from time to time and hang out with you fine, lovely folks. You can join us either through audio on Wednesdays if you are a patron at the $1 tier or more, but for as little as a dollar a month you can get access to the show ad free and early. And if you would prefer to not pay us, which is, you know, totally your prerogative, I suppose, the show comes out Thursday. If you are wanting to check us out, we are on YouTube every week on Tuesday nights. Ben is Handsome YT is the channel, and sometimes, well, tonight we're also streaming on Twitter because StreamYard allows for it, and we're paying for the ability to do so. If it doesn't work out, that's fine, but, you know, maybe you're watching this there too. You can't ever be too sure about these things. If you want to hang out with us somewhere other than the show, you can go over to our Discord at handsomephantom.com/discord. Anybody can join there, whether you're a patron or not. We appreciate you, and we thank you for hanging out. We've had some... I think this feet thing has gone too far, guys. I don't know.
We played into it for weeks, Ben, so you cannot be that angry. I remember a time we could play back the clips. I said, enough with the feet. It's getting bigger than us, Ben. and you didn't listen. You doubled down for weeks.
I made a mistake, guys. So I was on an episode of Constellation, which is a podcast that the company LSM that I work for does. And this hasn't come out yet. It'll come out a couple weeks. But one of the topics was shoes.
Oh, no.
And I was not alone in hating people showing their feet in sandals.
See,
and
flip-flops. Even now you can't help yourself what to talk about. This is exactly the problem that I'm outlining and what I said a few moments ago.
Well, all I can say is thank God we're not bigger, because we'd have people sending us pictures of real feet instead of just like emojis and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that would be awful. Don't do that.
Please don't get more people to watch the show. We would hate that.
We would hate for the entire foot fetish, feet finder community to come over to our show and support us. We would absolutely hate that if we were
It's better than furries.
Is there a feet finder community? Is that a thing?
Probably.
I mean... It is a community.
I know that there is a foot fetish community. Yes, I'm aware of that disgusting fact.
I mean, it's
honestly, if it's legal, whatever, do what you want, except for feet, and you should be burned at the stake, in my opinion.
There are Toyota Corolla enthusiast clubs, so I'm pretty sure there are feet finders communities out there somewhere.
I want to know specifically if feet finder was like a subreddit that you were part of or something.
We can Google it.
Nope.
No, okay.
I think we've spent enough time on this. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to vote to adjourn.
The voice of reason, once again.
Adjourn the foot talk. Thank you.
One of the things they teach you in business school, obviously, is you should never tell the internet the thing you hate. But the thing they don't tell you is that that's good for engagement if you do tell them. So, I'm not saying I'm just fishing here. But if I was, I wouldn't be doing it with my feet.
Yeah, you just caught a foot.
Guys, you want to talk about some video games? We don't have that interesting of stuff to talk about, because it's that time of year.
We probably should.
But we're going to make it interesting because we're interesting. And that's what my mom said, and that's what I'm going with. Number one, Hogwarts Legacy, the hottest topic of the entire year. Actually, it was the best-selling game of the entire year, so I guess there's some truth to that. Hogwarts Legacy has performed exceptionally well on the Nintendo Switch, Dave. Becoming the third best-selling release on the platform in 2023. Despite being released on other platforms over 9 months ago, the game's success on the Switch has propelled it to the number one spot on the UK box charts, surpassing titles like Call of Duty. Why did I put that in quotes? The Switch version of the game was a late addition, but its strong performance is a testament to the enduring popularity of the Harry Potter franchise and the quality of the port by Avalanche Software. The success of Hogwarts Legacy on the Switch comes despite the game not receiving any nominations at the Game Awards. So, boys, we all checked out Hogwarts Legacy back in February when it came out on PS5 and Xbox and PC. Now it's out on the Switch. Dave, you had mentioned at the time, you're like, yeah, I'm going to get to it eventually. And Brandon and I were like, no, we're enjoying this game enough. We're going to buy it for you. Should we have waited for you to play it on the Switch and bought it for you there instead?
That would have been funny, because if I hadn't played it on PS5 or Series S, I probably would have just gone ahead and played it on the Switch, and I would have enjoyed it, because I think the reason this game is doing so well is it's a really good game, and it's obviously a downgrade, but it's still appears to be a good game that people want to play on the Switch, and a lot of people have a Nintendo Switch in the UK and Europe and Asia and all over the world. So it should be no surprise that this is doing as well as it is. I was curious like what the comparables were. So I popped over to Open Critic and Metacritic, and there are no legitimate like reviews there yet to compare, you know, what people are saying about the Switch version. But Digital Foundry, our loving friends, they do have a pretty extensive video on the Switch version, and they are calling it the most comprehensive downgrades seen in the modern era. Which if you kind of watch their coverage, it's pretty interesting, the amount of effort that has gone into ensuring that this thing runs on Switch. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying runs, I'm not saying runs well. Mm-hmm. Because there were a lot of concessions. At the end of the day, I think it's a miracle that this game is one, running on Switch, and two, even somebody made the decision to put it on Switch, because it's an odd choice. But you know, it's doing well, and it's clear that a lot of effort was put into this port. So yeah, I mean, I'm just happy to see that more people are enjoying this game that maybe only have a Nintendo Switch and couldn't have otherwise played the game. So, I think the other issue is like, we're comparing this version to a much more superior version. So obviously it's going to be looked down upon. But again, at the end of the day, I'm just happy that everybody's able to enjoy this game because it's really, really good. So,
yeah. Brandon, on the whenever they did the PS4 version of the game, because we played on PS5, all three of us, but whenever they did the PS4 version of the game, people were showing clips of like, oh, this takes forever to load into a new area. Instead of just bursting through the doors in the castle, you know, you actually have a whole loading screen, which, hey, at least you're still playing the game.
Right.
My opinion is that on the Switch, if you get on your broom to try and ride, it has a pop-up and it's like, are you sure you don't just want to fast travel?
Yeah. Yeah, Ben, I was looking at what you wrote here and you put Call of Duties in quotes. You should have put quality of the port. You should have put quality in quotes instead. I agree with Dave mostly. I think that it's a net positive for consumers that it's even an option to play on this. And it is really, I mean, Dave's right. It is running on the Switch. It's not running very well by any means, and it's very much a lesser experience. But to be honest with you, I can kind of step back from myself for a minute and think, do most people that are going to be playing this that have a Switch even care? Do they even know? Are they do they know about Digital Foundry? And the answer to that is probably no.
Yeah.
The answer to that is probably no. So overall, I mean, props to Avalanche for even taking on such an ambitious thing. Dave's right. I watched the Digital Foundry video as well. There was an extensive amount of work done to even get it functioning. Not well, but just functioning. And I guess that's something. You know, Avalanche has done well to kind of support this game and make sure all the other versions of the game are running well. And I guess the Switch hopefully is no exception. Maybe they'll continue to tweak things. But clearly it's not the best version of the game. But if it were between not playing the game at all or playing it on the Switch, I think for most people, they still would be just as happy to be able to play it at all. This is good news. And I'm really glad it's still selling because it is a good game, even though there was a lot of controversy about the game. I feel like the devs worked really hard and the Switch port is no different. Even though it doesn't run perfect, it is an actual miracle that it's running at all, if you ask me, with the software the hardware. So
we've got a nickname for The Witcher on Switch. It's The Switcher. what is the name for Hogwarts on Switch? Like, is that trash? Like, I don't know. Is there
Fogwarts?
Hogwarts Legacy.
Legacy.
Legacy. You know, it's interesting because I'm sure the game is dramatically decreased in quality. I haven't actually checked it out myself, obviously, but it's interesting because we think of the Switch as like, oh, well, there's low res. It's not Switch legs. Somebody in chat says it, the police are. Oh my, they're angry out
they're
there.
They're here.
Ambulances, they're here. They've come. The
Switchwarts Legacy.
Switchwarts Legacy. So the other day, my youngest son wanted to play. He's been playing this Sims game. It's like Sims for kids on his 3DS, which he thinks is the coolest, newest, hottest system in the world. He's been playing it. And
dude, I came over to Ben's house. I'm so sorry. I came over and he was like, did you bring your 3DS over? And I'm like, no, I have no idea where that fucking thing is. It's in a box somewhere, man. I haven't seen it in years. No, I didn't. I appreciate your enthusiasm, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because he was like really when his older brother would be playing games, he wanted to be watching TV. And now my mom found at a yard sale near her work, like she found the 3DS and like 5 or 7 games with it for $15, and it's in perfect condition.
Damn.
So it's a steal of the century, but she gave it to him and he's been loving it. Anyway, he's been playing this EA Sims game for kids, whatever it's called. And I was like, man, I think he'd really like Animal Crossing. So I have a Switch, the OLED. My son has my original Switch. And then I have another Switch, the better battery life, which I've been intending on selling, but I'm lazy, I guess is the right way to put it. And so I have this, the better battery life model. I was like, you know what? I'm going to load up Animal Crossing on there for him and just let him play it and see if he likes it. Because I'm not giving him my island for sure. And my older son wants his own island. So I transferred my island to my new Switch. My oldest son has a Switch where he can play if he wants to. And as I was going on there, like loading it all, transferring it over, I was like, my God, the load times in this game are so terrible. I can't believe it. The game runs fine. It's perfectly fine. But the, everything that loads, anytime you have to go through a door or load up the start menu or anything, it takes forever. And I started thinking, I'm like, you know what? I've been playing a lot of Switch lately with the new Mario games. Mario Wonder runs like a dream. There's almost no loading. It's fantastic. Mario RPG has been really good. But then I started thinking back, like even Tears of the Kingdom, pretty long load times. If you go all the way back to Breath of the Wild, you have some pretty substantial load times there, and that was brand new at the beginning of the console generation. So
Metroid Dread 2D side scroller that I'm currently playing has pretty egregious load times. I don't even know if they're that bad, or I haven't experienced load times in such a long time. So
yeah. Right, yeah. So it's like, but when I'm playing those games, yeah, it's like, okay, really? I gotta wait 10 seconds, which seems ridiculous, but it's like I gotta wait 10 seconds for this thing to load up. But I guess if you really want to play Hogwarts and you only have a Switch. And honestly, the market's right there. That's the target demographic, Switch owners.
Pre-release, I would have said to you, there probably aren't that many people out there, but based on this news story, there are.
Yeah. Now, Brandon, this is a little bit off topic, but Dave and I had a couple weeks ago when you weren't able to make it, Dave and I had a discussion about Hogwarts being on, or Hogwarts not getting a nomination for the Game Awards.
Sure.
And you weren't here for that conversation. I just wanted to see if you had anything to weigh in on there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's probably the safe bet to keep it out of the show just to kind of like dodge any sort of controversy. That doesn't mean the safe bet is the right bet, I guess. And safe is subjective as well. I don't agree with that, but it is a crying shame that there are so many games that are nominated that... I don't want to downplay them, but this game definitely should have been there, undoubtedly. And the fact that it was kind of snubbed in all ways is really sad. And it's net negative for the entire industry. I mean, truthfully, because there's many, many, many devs who poured their hearts and souls into this. And it shows when you play the game. I mean, the buzz around this game is fantastic. You said it, Ben. It's like the best selling game of the year. And yeah, it's just sad to see, really. I guess that's all I got to say about it. It just sucks. It shouldn't be this way, but it is. And, you know, I remember a point when the Oscars started to go downhill. We were watching the Oscars every year, and it's like, I don't want to watch this shit anymore, you know? And so it's like, at some point, you know, when more shit like this starts happening, I mean, the Game Awards is all we have right now, right? But at some point, when you keep making bad decisions, it's like... how many millions of people bought this game and love it and maybe want to tune in and say, hey, I want to see how it did. And they're going to be completely disappointed to see that it doesn't even make the cut, which isn't justified in my opinion. So
sure. One comment here I'll read in regards to this, the story I told from Ed says, Brandon, you Street Pass Ben's son immediately.
I know. Street Pass, 3DS with Street Pass. Every single show we went to, I brought my 3DS and had the network on for that exact reason. That was the only time I could get Street Passes because, you know, I'm out of high school. I'm not in college. I got some in college, but Street Pass was surprisingly one of the cooler features, in my opinion, just to kind of see where people were from. And I'm honestly kind of disappointed they didn't transfer it over into Switch because I thought it was really, really kind of nifty.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll have to dig it out. I'm going to do some digging around and I'll find it and I'll Street Pass your boy.
I don't even think he knows. I guarantee he doesn't know what Street Pass is.
Well, he's about to. Yeah.
He's about to find out. Can you imagine? I was just thinking about Street Pass. I'm like, man, they should do a Street Pass for iPhone or for mobile devices. And I'm like, it would that's called what's it called? Near field communication, NFC. Yeah. That's called stealing your identity.
Yeah,
now.
And it wouldn't even be fun because the fun part about the 3DS is you would get like you would get two or three and it'd be like, holy shit, that's a lot. You know how many iPhones I pass a day? It would be like there would be no rest. It would be like 1,000 in one day because I went to the mall or something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on. This one's relevant to our interest in some ways. Number two, ReedPop is exploring the possibility of selling its gamer network business, which comprises notable gaming media outlets such as Eurogamer, Rock Paper Shotgun, VG247, Dicebreaker, and GamesIndustry.biz. The UK-based operation was acquired by ReedPop in 2018, aiming to create a comprehensive gaming events and media group. However, challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic, including event cancellations and cutbacks, have led ReedPop to consider selling the Gamer Network. The Gamer Network. Notably, this potential sale does not affect ReedPop's other properties in the UK, such as MCM Comic-Con, EGX, and Popverse. I wanted to talk about this a little bit. One, to talk about the, you know, the state of games media and the, you know, the probability of all the more and more of these getting sold off and closing and everything else. But also because ReedPop has been in charge of many of the conventions we've loved over the years, including having a little bit of a hand in E3, or they were going to have a little bit of a hand. But PAX, one of our favorite places to go, things to do as a team of people working on video game stuff. We've really enjoyed PAX. And I just wonder, like, what does this kind of thing signal for the industry at large? And Dave, we'll start with you. I don't know. Maybe are we concerned? Is it totally, are live events totally different than websites and vice versa?
It's interesting because the wording in the news story is they're exploring the possibility, which means that, they aren't necessarily committed to starting to divest some of their assets, or they don't actually know what the real value of these outlets are. It's probably kind of difficult to ascertain exactly what the value of these, you know, different outlets are, which are really good outlets. I mean, we cite from a lot of these quite a bit. And I like going to them. So, but if they only acquire them in 2018, I can't really imagine that their value has changed much since then. So it's kind of an interesting approach that they're taking with this. It is kind of also surprising to me that this is the part of ReedPop's portfolio that they are looking to kind of sell, because I would think that the impact of COVID-19 and what it's had on the event space would make that kind of the piece that they wanted to move on from. So it is interesting to see that, you know, media outlets, I think, are generally the sort of things that hold their values, but this is the piece of their business that they're looking to get out of. I will say, though, that the kind of events that ReedPop runs are, a lot of them seem to be kind of tabletop oriented. And I think that is a little bit more well insulated against, you know, the way the industry's gone against in-person events. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, an E3 style event, that's pretty easy to just move online. But, you know, tabletop, that's not really easy to make virtual. So I think maybe the value in those events has carried on. And I really like that about their events. They've been less like kind of big business, big publisher focused, and more on, again, tabletop, trading, comics, and then like indie stuff. So I hope that sticks around. I really hope we haven't attended our last PAX or ReedPop related show. But yeah, I don't know that this really signals that they are actually going to sell off these outlets, because it sounds like they're not fully committed to kind of going through with it. But
yeah,
I hope their events stick around. I really do, because I want to go back to them.
Brandon, I think a lot of times when companies, you know, when they let the word slip that they might be thinking about selling some stuff, it's a lot of times just they're trying to fish and see if anybody offers them a big chunk of money that they'd be willing to accept. But I don't know. What do you think about the future of not just ReedPop, but, you know, live events in general, and then all these other outlets, games journalism as traditionally as we know it? What do you think the future is?
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with exactly what you just said, Ben. I mean, I think that exploring the possibility is, you know, a big difference from us reading the article that says they're selling. And I think that this is kind of them throwing out the line. You know, the world economy is kind of down right now, and maybe they're trying to recoup on some lost costs. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think live events will ever truly go away. I feel like there is no compromise. I feel like we will see a big shift in the way they're ran and how many of them there are. But there is still an interest in this sort of thing. I mean, clearly. And yeah, I don't hope to see any of these publications, you know, go under in any sort of way. We're seeing so much bad news in the gaming industry. The last thing we need is all of these giants to be dwindling away. But this, coupled with the rise of, I guess, video game ecosphere that has just absolutely skyrocketed doesn't make me worried about games or worried about them being in the media. We just might start to see new things pop around, because if these big things are going away, I mean, games are bigger than they've ever been, and year over year they continue to rake in more and more money. So even if things that we did love, like gaming conferences and these big publications, go away, new things will come up. It might be different, but you know, this sort of thing isn't going away. And I think as long as there's interest in in-person events, which I still think there is quite a bit of interest, even if it changes in the future, that I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon. Maybe all of these conferences, you know, we're seeing the big push with the E3s and everyone doing their own thing, but that isn't nearly the same as a consumer conference. You know what I mean? It just isn't at all. So
Brandon, I would trade all of these things, all of the in-person shows, the PAX, the board game shows, which I, you know, have attended a few in the previous years, but I would trade all of it for a revival of the PlayStation experience.
Oh,
just
dude.
One time. Just bring it back one time.
PSX was, I feel so lucky to have been a part of a couple years of PSX. I think I went for 3 different years at least. Man, it was a magical experience, like truly, truly, truly an awesome experience. And I can't say with certainty that I would trade PAX for PSX, but I would love a world again where Sony can do this. And to be honest with you, I don't know that we are ever getting PSX again, man. If we didn't get it for the PS5 generation, I think it's gone, and you know, that kind of sucks, but we still got PAX. Whenever PAX starts talking about shutting down, I'm going to be kind of, you know, a little bit heartbroken, because that's kind of where we have a lot of our legs as far as the shows we've been to go. But yeah, we'll see. I would love to go to PAX here pretty soon. I don't know if we're going to make it next year, but that would be pretty cool. So
yeah, that would be cool. I agree. Let's start talking about it.
Yeah,
just the three of us.
Absolutely.
We're not taking anybody else.
Fuck it.
We don't want to see anybody else. We don't want to be part of them. Okay, just us three.
Show with thousands of people. We don't want anybody
else. Yeah, we don't want anybody.
just us.
All right, moving on to number 3. Ubisoft has attributed the appearance of full-screen pop-up ads in Assassin's Creed Odyssey to a, quote, technical error. Players reported encountering Black Friday pop-up ads when accessing the map screen in the game, causing dissatisfaction among the gaming community. Ubisoft clarified that the intention was to display an ad for Assassin's Creed Mirage in the main menu of other Assassin's Creed titles, but the error led to in-game menus and displaying the promotion. The company stated that it promptly addressed the issue and resolved it. Such full-screen pop-up ads in the middle of gameplay are rare, and Ubisoft labeled it as a mistake. Dave, you're the Ubisoft expert here, and also maybe the Assassin's Creed expert, quite frankly. How is it possible for this to be a mistake? How is it possible that we meant to put something on the home screen, but instead we made it so every time you pause the game, it popped up? And also, how do you feel about them in general?
Yeah, so initially when I saw this, I kind of thought nothing of it. You know, Assassin's Creed has done this for quite a while, where they have like a Call of Duty style main screen, and on that main screen where you first enter the game, you've got, you know, some ads for in-game purchases, cosmetic items, you know, maybe some ads for discounts on past Assassin's Creed games, and maybe an ad for like a trailer for like a new game or something. But the more I think about where Assassin's Creed Infinity is going and how it's going to be this living, breathing thing, and a lot of content creators who are really close to Ubisoft are starting to signal that, you know, everything is changing for Assassin's Creed. What if that means that we're going to start to see like free-to-play entries in the series that are ad-supported? So, you know, you don't have to buy anything in an in-game shop. You can play the game for free, but you're going to get ads for other Assassin's Creed games or other Ubisoft games or Ubisoft subscription services, stuff like that. So I don't really know how I feel about this. I kind of feel like I'd be a little bit more traditionalist when it comes to these kind of experiences and you know, rather pay for it and not have the disruptions in game. Then again, if it's in a pause screen, like I feel like I can kind of just tune it out. So I don't know. I'm really conflicted about this. I don't think it would turn me off from playing Assassin's Creed, but then what does it do to the quality of the game? Like, there's just so much going on in my head, like thinking about what the implications of this could be. But again, if Ubisoft is being truthful and they are, you know, the squeakiest, clean, nicest guys in the video game industry, maybe it's true and it was just a mistake and we're not going to see these things in their game. But I don't know. Things are changing with the franchise, so this could very much be, you know, a signal of what's to come for how we're going to consume the Assassin's Creed series.
Brandon Ed in chat says, shout out to the Twitter community notes calling out that this error has happened in a previous entry as well.
Yeah. When I heard this story, I honestly could not believe that it was an error. Like, I really genuinely think, you know, the second we get bad press, we double down on it, say, oh, it was a mistake, it was a mistake. And I don't know that they put a ton of thought into it. Maybe it was like, hey, we want it to be in the menu. But the statement stands is that, like, between Call of Duty, you know, Activision and Ubisoft doing these things, it really is becoming incredibly egregious as far as self-advertisement goes. It's very self-masturbatory in a way, and it almost is disgusting. I mean, I hate it. It's just like, I know your game's out, okay? If you want to put it somewhere discreetly, fine, like a little thing in the corner of the menu and not like a full screen pop-up, fine. But it really is, it almost dilutes the experience you're having, because they're saying, hey, you know, we have something that's newer and better. Pay us more money for this. Don't play what you're playing. What about this? And I feel like that just does a disservice even to themselves. It's like, I know you got to pump the numbers, but yeah, it's just frustrating. And between Activision and Ubisoft, these are the two companies that I'd be least surprised doing something like this. 2K also has some pretty bad stuff going on as far as self-advertisement goes and, you know, pumping the numbers on those coins you could buy for basketball and shit. So yeah, I don't know. It's just the world we live in now. And yeah, it sucks, but let's just be thankful that not every game has this yet. So
yeah, it's very common for when a game has either, you know, a new DLC out or it has a sequel out or something like that to in the in-game menu or the menu of the game, to put a little blurb that, you know, this is out, buy it through here to get a this percent discount or whatever. And I think I agree. I don't like it at all, but I do wonder how egregious advertising another entry in the series is in the pause menu. The thing I worry about, I don't really worry, whatever, but the thing I think about is, will they start promoting, like, am I going to start seeing like ads for Kohl's in my video games, or like, you know, just random assortment of things?
I mean,
and not just video games. I think, well, there was an NBA game.
If you can use your Kohl's cash to buy some horse armor, then it's not a bad thing, is it?
I mean, I don't know how to feel about that, Dave. You just got, yeah, I don't know, man. It ultimately is what it is, and I guess we should be thankful it isn't worse. We just expect the bare minimum now, because things just keep getting more and more consume. So yeah, I don't know, whatever.
I think what's starting to drive me nuts in these games is, like, when I pay full price for a Call of Duty game and I'm having, like, several, even Halo Infinite does it, when I'm having several in-game prompts that I accidentally hit a button that takes me to buy a battle pass.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, please stop.
Well, between that and even what Ben said, it's like, there is a difference between something being in the corner, right, and just being there. But when I pop open your game and I have to close three menus, like the first experience, it's like press X to go forward. And then it's like one ad for the store, one ad for the next game, one ad for the battle pass. And then you get to the menu. Like, I swear to God, Call of Duty does that shit. And it just, yeah, I don't know. If I want to buy your shit, I know where to find it. There's a huge icon that says shop. You've made it very clear where to buy shit from. And if you want to advertise to me there, fine. But I feel like some of these games, like, I need a fucking ad blocker for them. And yeah, it's just a little frustrating. But
it's like when you log into a website that you haven't been to before, or haven't been to in like a year.
Right.
And all of a sudden it's like this new feature, this new feature, this new feature. Right. And you just click. I did that literally an hour ago. I logged onto a website and I hadn't visited in a while. And it just, I swear it was 30 seconds. I just read it, click it out, read it, click it out. I'm barely even reading them at some point. It's just like, we have this. This is the promotion going on right now. Yada, yada, yada. And I was like, do I even want to click through all these to get where I'm going?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm with Dave about I'd rather just pay for my games or pay for a subscription. Either way, I'm okay either way, rather than the free-to-play supported is fine too with cosmetics, but I don't like the ad-supported angle of it. And ultimately, everything's an ad. I get it. That's the way we are, but yeah. All right, moving on. Number four. Embracer CEO Lars Wingerforce has reportedly acknowledged in a company email that Free Radical Design, the studio responsible for the Time Splitter series, could face closure on December 11th, 2023, following a restructuring plan. This follows Embracer's confirmation of over 900 layoffs during its second quarter. The fate of Free Radical remains uncertain, as it might stay open if third parties express interest in acquiring it. Many Free Radical employees have already indicated their job search, and the potential closure raises questions about the future of the Time Splitters franchise. The studio was reestablished in 2021 to revive the IP. Before we actually went live, actually like an hour before we went live, Trash popped in chat because the thumbnail was Time Splitters and said, "Ain't no way Free Radical is closing again." But Brandon, did you ever have any experience with Time Splitters or anything like that?
No.
Dave, what about you?
I didn't know.
Okay. I remember checking it out, but I definitely did not play through it the whole way. But I just think that this is such a beloved series. They did a couple Free Radical games in the early 2000s, late 90s, somewhere in there. They did a couple Time Splitters games, and then they close, and then they reopen the franchise or the studio. And I would imagine that many of those people who were there for the original one are not there anymore, but maybe there are a few who signed on. But I don't know, just another Embracer L, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And usually when somebody would be like, hey, we might be closing this, you know, Embracer swoops in and buys them for whatever price they tell them. And then everything's hunky-dory again. But at some point, we knew that had to end. And then maybe that's starting to happen here.
Yeah, I mean, do we really think, and as someone who has very little experience with the IP, do we think it is an IP that anybody's going to be interested in buying?
No.
In 2023, 2024,
it's pretty niche. Even yeah. Like, I think it was a hit on the GameCube, and that just kind of goes to show what kind of following it had. But no,
yeah,
can't monetize that easily.
So yeah, I mean, I really think they're like chiseling away at the granite of the gravestone right now for this, just by, you know, getting everyone ready. You know, people are starting to look for jobs, and I guess this is a lot different than what we've seen. What we've seen is just mass layoffs like today and like Volition and like, you know, effective immediately we keep seeing. So I guess this is a little bit different. Maybe they know something we don't. I mean, this signals slightly differently than some of the other things we've even seen from Embracer. So maybe
that's a good point.
Maybe they know something we don't about Time Splitters, or maybe there is somebody out there that they already know is interested, or they probably would have just closed immediately. And who knows, maybe it's a fiscal year thing. I don't know. But yeah, sad to see. But once again, that's kind of like my running catchphrase is sad to see. But
yeah,
maybe I'll have to check out Time Splitters at some point.
Yeah. Like Dave said, it is pretty niche, but I feel like it's one of those parts of history that at least watching a YouTube playthrough of is probably a good move. So you know the game, I guess. But Trash says Time Splitters was a lot of former Rare employees, which is stuff I definitely remember that from back in the day. And he says they had a full remake of Time Splitters 2 in Homefront: The Revolution. They never released it otherwise. I did not know that. I didn't remember that. So.
Do you think there's
Hey, Trash said it. That's got to be true,
right? Do you think there's any possibility that Rare could be interested?
No. Rare would only be interested if Microsoft was interested, and Microsoft would only be interested if it's making money.
Fair.
Let's keep in mind that the last game that Free Radical developed as Free Radical was Haze.
Yeah.
So it didn't end well. And then Crytek UK is kind of what they formed into, and they only just worked on Crysis. So I don't know. I feel like Crytek, the creative
paying them, I think.
And the creative minds that work behind Time Splitters are probably long gone or diluted now. So
yeah,
it's too bad to see. But there's a lot of places you can buy GameCubes, and I'm sure a physical version of this game exists. So
yeah. There are a lot of places you can buy GameCubes for basically the same price they were when they were new now. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, they're probably like $150 for a good GameCube now, which is crazy to think about. All right, moving on to the next news item. Brandon, I brought this one especially for you. Especially for you. The next Subnautica game, planned for a 2025 launch, was revealed not through a traditional game announcement, but in a Krafton financial report. Described as the next game in the Subnautica universe, it's categorized as an adventure slash survival title, just like the last ones. While specific details are scarce, it's expected to continue the underwater survival formula of the Subnautica series. The announcement follows a trend of game details emerging from financial reports rather than traditional reveals. Brandon, I don't have anything to prelude this with. Just sound off. Talk to me about Subnautica.
Let's go. Huge fan of the first one. Huge fan. Super excited to hear this news. I know we haven't really heard anything, and I guess this is better than hearing nothing. I mean, knowing that it is in development is good. I mean, we probably could have assumed that based on how successful the other one was. But yeah, this is amazing. I hope they've learned a lot from Below Zero. I played a little bit of Below Zero, but not nearly as much as the original. Below Zero kind of lacked some of what made the first one so amazing. They made some changes that kind of, let's just say, took the charm away from the first one. Some of the best parts of the first one, they
kind of... Like what? Can you give an example?
Yeah, it's just the map was smaller, and a lot of things were more enclosed, and one of the best parts of Subnautica is the, like, open water feel. The, like, you hear something in the distance, and you see a shadow far away, and a lot of the map in Below Zero is kind of like either underneath ice, or there are huge drop-offs. Like, don't get me wrong, it's the same in a lot of ways, but some of the things that made the game what it was, like some of the coolest parts of the game, I felt like were kind of lost on the second one. And they put some cool stuff in, but it just wasn't quite the same. And I think a lot of people felt that way. So I hope they kind of recapture that. I think it's a really, really, really talented studio. And it took them quite a bit of time to kind of get the game where it is now, but they have the talent to get it there. So I'm hoping they kind of let it bake for as long as they need to and kind of come up with another. Dude, survival is scary as fuck. You're exactly correct. And that was like the best part of it. So to be like kind of confined, you would think that would be more scary, but like it was such a unique type of scary, the first one. But, you know, I'm super excited about this. And I don't know that it's going to happen. And we tried the Subnautica multiplayer mod and our save file got deleted and we never played it again.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up because I'd really like to go back to Subnautica. We tried playing it together.
Right.
There is a mod that supposedly works really well, and many people report no problems with it. But we played, what, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 hours, something like that, and our save file got deleted. And in a crafting game, the worst thing that can happen is your progress gets reset.
Yeah. So
other games, it's like, whatever. Now I know the path. I know how to kill this enemy, whatever. Survival crafting games.
Yeah, no. It was like we just farmed resources for like hours and built a base and now it's gone. So yeah, we never went back, which was kind of sad, but I'm just really, really crossing my fingers that they heard all of the community outreach. Like, this game would be amazing with multiplayer. This game would be amazing with multiplayer. And I can attest that, you know, the first one was not built for multiplayer. Plain and simple. And in a lot of ways, it doesn't even really make sense. Even the mod, it had a little bit of jank, but it was clearly not built for that. So I'm really hoping they listen to what the people want and see the popularity of multiplayer games and kind of lead forward with that. I'm just hoping for no battle pass. That's what I'm hoping for is no cosmetics.
$9.99 a month and you get an extra free oxygen tank.
Right. Yeah. So
every time you log in. Dave, have you any experience with the Subnautica series?
Yeah, I played it on Brandon's recommendation earlier this year. I played the first one quite a bit. I need to go back and finish it. And so, yeah, this is really good news. I think this is like the worst way you can announce a game, though. And when I got into Subnautica earlier this year, I got really into the Reddit community because there is a really dedicated and enthusiastic fan base. So to announce a sequel like this, I don't think is the best way for Krafton to make kind of a good first impression as the new sort of handlers of this IP to the community. So, and that's the thing I wonder is like Krafton purchased the developer Unknown Worlds in 2021. So that's 2 years after that Below Zero came out. So what does that mean for the sequel? I mean, we talk about, you know, things that the community would like to see, some of the ways that Below Zero, how it was received, and how could this be kind of monetized or changed? Because, I don't know, Subnautica felt like a pretty pure experience. Like, there wasn't a lot of shitty stuff in it. And I don't know that Krafton is really known for too much of that. I know, you know, they have some of that stuff in PUBG and whatever it may be. But I'd be interesting to see how the kind of change in publisher affects the sequel. But in any case, this makes me really want to go back and finish Subnautica 1 and excited to see what we get with the sequel. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Krafton published Callisto Protocol by Striking Distance, which, you know, it's not the most amazing game, but it's a solid linear 10-hour experience. And there was nothing in that game that made me scream, like, why did they do this? You know, Battle Pass, whatever. It's not a live service game, but there were things that, I mean, clearly their funding method was off. They spent too much money. They took too long and made it a failure by those accounts. Otherwise, a decent game. So I also agree, Brandon, that the multiplayer built into the game would be awesome. But I do worry that when you introduce multiplayer, you introduce monetization methods that we aren't fans of. And I get it. We're looking at a lot more monetization before our lives are over than we are since our lives started. But it just sucks that everything has to. Okay, well, what's like anytime somebody announces a game and they're like, this is going to be a purely single player offline experience. It's like, yeah, but what's the catch?
Right.
Is it going to be $900? Because how else are you making your money? So, yeah. All right, moving on. It's time to talk about what we've been playing. Brandon, let's kick it to you first. You and I have a couple things in common.
Sure.
And I'll just chime in whenever you're talking about them.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, I'd like to say that I continued my journey into the Halo franchise.
Let's go.
I don't know if you guys remember, I played Combat Evolved and I beat it a couple weeks ago. And I'm glad to say that I just finished Halo 2 with one of my good friends in co-op. So I've got to say the co-op experience in Halo is really cool. I'm really grateful to be playing it in this way. I think it's a lot of fun. But Halo 2, man, a very, very clear and quick step up in quality in all ways. And I'm not just talking about that it's been repolished through the Master Chief Collection. I mean, everything about the game, the lore is more interesting. The entire story is more interesting in a lot of ways. It's much more in depth. The Arbiter is a super cool character. I had always heard mention of the Arbiter, and I only really knew about Chief, but it was really cool to see how that kind of played out and to kind of have the game leave on a cliffhanger is also really interesting. I can't imagine what that was like back in the day, kind of finishing Halo 2 and then being like, what the fuck, you know, years and years. So really, really amazing game. I'm surprised because in a lot of ways I was starting to get a little bit fatigued with Halo. It for its time was monumental. Do not get me wrong. I can appreciate what it was, but Halo 2, like I said, was such a different experience in the, I think it had a lot to do with the story, honestly. It was a very clear step up.
And you never played it back in the day,
no,
right?
No. Yeah. This is my first time. So, we're going to be moving on to Halo 3 here pretty soon. I've played a lot of Halo 3, but I never beat Halo 3. So that's going to be,
you played Halo 3 story without playing Halo 2.
Correct.
That must've been really confusing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was a PlayStation family, and so the only time I played any of the Halos, I even remember some of the Halo 2 levels. I only played those at friend's house. So, just really, truly monumental, and kind of sad to see how things have went based on, you know, seeing the legacy played out before me. But, looking forward to Halo 3. Next, I purchased a couple games. I actually purchased like four different games in the past couple days. But one of them was Evil West. I don't know if you guys know about this game. Ben and I checked it out. Dave, do you know Evil West? So pretty cool. It's like a third person. It's like the setting of like Vampire Hunter, Red Dead, Wild West. But the combat is kind of like combo driven, almost like Doom a little bit. So super fast paced, super action packed combo, heavy combat. It's pretty good. I don't know what to say about it. It's like a perfect in the mid 70s game. It very much feels like a 360 game, but with like slightly better graphics. And the best part of it by far is the combat. I'm just going to lead forward with saying that. But it's also kind of refreshing because it's completely, completely linear, like 100% linear. There's very few even branching pathways, and if it's a pathway, it's like you walk a couple feet and then there's a piece of treasure and then you walk back to the main path. So it's kind of cool just, you know, getting through it, and you got action, cutscene, action, cutscene, action, cutscene. And that's kind of interesting because not many games kind of play out like that nowadays. So what did you think, Ben? I know we only played for a tiny bit, but
I don't remember how I got this game, if it was on sale and I bought it or if I got a code or what, but you asked me about it and I was like, I think I have that in my Steam library. So I hopped in and looked and it was there. And so we fired up. You had already played a little bit. I basically did the tutorial and then we did like one or two levels, for lack of a better word, together in the co-op. I really liked it. It's certainly not going to win any, awards, except for maybe in my heart. Like, it's very much with all the games we play now, it's like either super grindy or always online and or super, super story heavy. And really, this is just a pure like beat 'em up. I know there is a story, but it doesn't matter, it seems like. And it's got that linear feel like you're talking about that I do miss heavily from that 360 generation, where there were so many games that were like, this is a great 10 to 15 hour experience. You're not going to have to find 17 million collectibles, although there are collectibles in the game. You just play it. And I did really like what I played. I obviously haven't got to play too much, but I'm thinking about next time I play it, checking it out on controller, because I was playing on mouse and keyboard, and I like the precision and being able to shoot with mouse and keyboard and everything, right, with mouse. But yeah, I do feel like some of the combos would just be way easier. Like, I have to hit E to shoot my pistol, and that just feels so weird to me. And I wonder if just having the ability to have a controller is just going to make it feel better. There's some games that are just designed better for controller, and this seems like it might be one of them.
I agree. And why you should play in the chat is talking about the dialogue. Evil West is very much like, for better or worse, like just knows that it's like a B movie and it just leans super hard into that. And I guess that's also something that's kind of charming about it. It's kind of one of those things where like every other line of dialogue, you're like rolling your eyes, but it's almost charming in a way. It just doesn't take itself too seriously, which I guess is pretty nice. So
my favorite part, and spoiler for the tutorial, in the tutorial, you're like going along and all of a sudden you run up on this like group of bad guys, and your buddy from the first cutscene is there and he's like, let me help you out. And then you like beat that section and then you move on through another linear part and you don't see him anywhere. And then you get to the next part and there's like this group of enemies and he's like, I'm back to help you out again. It's like, what? Where were you? Like, why weren't you traveling with me, dude? How did you get here? Why didn't I take the path you took? You clearly got here faster.
Right.
Just stuff like that where it's just. Yeah.
And then later that same guy's like guarding a guy, and then you go through this whole dungeon area and then you turn around and the guy that he's guarding and are standing like right there, just like out of nowhere. They're just like, hello, we're here now.
We're back.
Yeah. So it's pretty fun. And I got it on a super cheap sale.
Very campy.
Yeah.
Very
campy. No, pretty fun. But last but certainly not least, I did play, honestly, I don't even think I made it through the tutorial. I had about an hour before we started this, but I did start Dave the Diver, which was also one of the other games that I picked up on. I don't remember if it was on sale. Either way, it's not very expensive.
Like $20 at most.
But very, very cool. I hadn't even really watched too much of the gameplay of this. I knew what him swimming around looked like, but I didn't know much more. And I'm really enjoying the beginning so far. Not that I've played too much, but I like the whole night and day cycle type of thing. And I wasn't sure how the whole restaurant aspect was going to play out, but I kind of just got through my first night at the restaurant and I could see it being a lot of fun. So,
yeah. Dave, on to you. What have you been playing?
Sorry, my daughter was crying, so I just muted and unmuted. Not a whole lot new this week. I'm still Metroid Dread is taking me a little bit longer than I expected, which is a good thing. It's still having a really, really good time with it. There are a couple things that are starting to bother me that I thought, like, I noticed when I first started playing, and I thought I would have kind of gotten used to this deep into the game. And the big one is the controls. So there are a lot of different like gadgets that you get in the game, as you know, with any Metroid game. And it's just kind of frustrating me, like how many buttons I have to press to use like my rockets as an example. So if I want to shoot a rocket and aim it somewhere not in front of me, I have to hold the left bumper. I have to then also hold the right bumper, and then I have to use the left stick to aim and then press Y to fire. And I feel like my hands are going in so many different directions, and to compound the issue is like the bosses in this game are really tough. Like there are mini bosses that are taking me dozens of tries. One, because I'm trash. But two, because I don't know, just like using some of your biggest attacks just takes so many friggin' button inputs just to line up a shot. And like you're spending all that time doing that and the windows to attack are so little. So, I don't know. It's not really taking away too much from my enjoyment. Still really, really liking the game. And again, not looking forward to it being finished. But little things that are annoying me. But in any case, it's still, I'm really, really glad I got it and finally started playing it. The other thing I checked out this week was Gran Turismo 7, so nothing new there. But the game did just have, I think, what is its biggest update since its release, and it was a free update. And it adds a lot of really cool new stuff. So you get a lot of the usual things like, you know, some new cars. There's a new track in Canada, which is cool. It's in Lake Louise, Alberta. And it sucks because it's a snow track and I don't want to play rally stages in a Gran Turismo game, but it's there. So rep Canada, that's cool. What I like, though, is it adds weekly events. So now when you log into the game, you have a set of five or six races that you can work through, and it'll give you a bonus set of credits if you clear all of the events. And you know, they start off pretty easy. Like I think the first event was like a Sunday Cup with just regular cars, and it gets kind of increasingly difficult, and the restrictions for the cars that you have to use, and you know, the kind of tires get more difficult. And the last event that I played and I didn't actually finish because it was too difficult was it was 10 laps on Trial Mountain or something like that. But fuel consumption and tire degradation had like 12 time multipliers on it. Ooh. So like it forced you to have to manage your tires, change your fuel management system, and actually make a pit stop midway through the game. And I don't think there's a single event in the campaign or like the initial set of menus in Gran Turismo that forces you to make a pit stop. So I really like that there's events that actually kind of incorporate the motorsport part of Gran Turismo, because I think that's kind of missing in a lot of the the vanilla version of the game. So I really like that. I think it's going to keep me coming back to the game. Another thing they've added is a whole new tier of license tests. Mm. And I am happy to share that I will not be doing these license tests because the base set were difficult enough. But it's cool to see that there's, like, if you haven't played Gran Turismo lately, I suggest you jump in and see, like, there is a lot of really cool new stuff. So yeah, that's it for me.
Nice. Cool. I've been continuing to play a little bit of Fortnite OG with Brandon and some others, and I don't have a lot more to say about it other than that I'm just really enjoying going back to the original map and having so much less clutter, so many fewer NPCs, less mini games within the game that you're playing. There's still some, it's still Fortnite. There's goofy stuff. There's crazy weapons. There's weird outfits, everything. But it's just really refreshing to go back to like a slightly simpler time. And it's not even the original map, but it's, you know, the season one map and they're progressing it forward. So I'm enjoying that. And I don't know, maybe I'll get back on to Fortnite every now and then for after they do away with OG. We'll see. But it's got about a week left and I'm planning on putting in at least a few more hours into it. I want to report that I am victorious over Mario. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, is OG going away? Was this just like an event?
Yeah, it was just an event.
It's only a couple. I think it's like 3 or 4 days, actually. I think it's way less than that. So,
yeah.
I think it's like the second.
4 days left.
The second.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Like a week?
Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the presumption is that it'll go away permanently, but maybe, I think, you know, no build was originally
a
temporary thing as well. So we'll see. Brandon, I think you've been enjoying it as well.
Yeah, no, it's been a ton of fun. We kind of talked about it before, but I do hope they continue to explore this whole bringing back older content. And it does actually stick around. I hope for that as well, because I don't see any reason we couldn't have multiple maps at once, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Money. I think money would be
the
main thing. I don't know. Maybe not. But it just seems like they want to have everybody together in the same environment.
Yeah.
There's the train. If you guys want to listen to the train for a little bit.
Well, it is your turn to tell us what you've been playing, Ben. So that's unfortunate for you.
That's why I actually asked you if you've been enjoying it, because I heard it coming and I was like, well, oh my God, it is so loud tonight. It's always louder at night. Mario Wonder, I have been victorious. I told you guys last week that I was going for 100%. After the podcast, I streamed for a little while. I streamed some Sea of Thieves. And then after that, while I was like getting everything ready to upload and things were uploading, I was like, I'm going to hop back in. And I probably put like, I don't know, half an hour into it. And I got further than I'd ever gotten before. And I thought, okay, I got further on this very last part of this very last incredibly long level. It's great to see what comes next. And then all of a sudden I was at the flagpole and I was like, okay, I've spent hundreds of lives getting here. I have to make sure I get the top of the final flag so that I get 100% completion. And I did it first try.
Oh, awesome.
Bless.
So
bless.
I finished it up. I conquered Mario Wonder. Suck it, Mario. It's 100%. Of course, I gave it to my son and like, 48 hours later, he was like, I beat Mario Wonder. Why did it take you so long? And I was like, you didn't do it the same. You beat all the levels. I was like, did you do this?
He's
like,
Dad.
Yeah. I was like, did you play the secret levels? What's the secret levels? Did you 100% them? What do you mean? Did you get the extra coin? What do you mean? Why would I do that? I just want to get to the end of the level. I'm like, you have a lot to learn.
You're not.
Go play 3DS with your brother. Okay.
Right.
But once I told him, I'm like, okay, he's like, it was good, but it was really easy. I was like, okay, the challenge is, and I, you know, told him about all the extra stuff. So now he's going back and playing it again, playing more of it, which I really love to see that he wants to go back and discover more things. I think that's awesome. So Mario Wonder is done. So I moved on to Mario RPG, putting a lot of time into the Switch these last few weeks. Mario RPG is fantastic. It's just as good as it's always been. Maybe even some people would say better. I don't know if you can say a remake's better than the original, but hey, everybody's welcome to their opinion. It's great artwork. Everything's beautiful. I don't love some of the animations they've fixed and made them look nicer. And I think it takes away from the charm a little bit. And then there's some cutscenes that they've put in it, which I think if I hadn't played the game before, I would like them a lot. But as somebody who wasn't expecting like a cutscene, I'm just like, eh, okay. Like, it's nice that it's there, but I don't know. It's not, it's a remake. Like, I don't know. I don't always love, I like remakes to bring it up to modern consoles and being able to play it now, but I don't, and on modern hardware, but I don't necessarily love the revisionist history with remakes, but it's not in any way bad. It's just maybe not what I wanted. And then they've also added some like different features to make things a little bit easier. There's a new power up bar that's there that I don't remember being there. And I don't think it was there originally, but it's fine. Everything about the game is great. I'm going to keep chugging through it. I'm probably halfway through and I was like, I'm going to put the brakes on this and play some other stuff because I want it to last and I wanted to actually play it. And it's nice because like there's parts of it I remember and I like know what boss is coming next. And they've changed some of the character models too. A few of them I've noticed. I'm like, this isn't what they looked like back then. But once you remember the timing of the old ones and now there's a new character animation, you're like, wait, I just got hit and I shouldn't have gotten hit there because I could have been able to block if I remember. It's a whole thing. I'm just being old though. In this, it's great. It's amazing. Anybody who loved the original should definitely play it. And anybody who hasn't played it should play it while remembering that it is a remake of one of the very first RPGs, especially Mario RPGs. So it's a great, great time. Also, my buddy Justin bought me a game called Hell Let Loose. I've seen this game before. It's basically a war simulator. I think it's available on consoles, but I don't know if there's crossplay. But I've been playing it on PC, and we've only played like 2 to 5 games, somewhere in that range. No, more like 3 to 5. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but these games are usually like an hour. Like the war itself, the battle is like an hour long. So it's really cool. It's super realistic, I guess, if there's such a thing as a realistic war game. But just, you know, minimal HUD, got to run a long way very slowly. One-shot kills, no tags over people's heads. You don't get a notification that pops up and tells you how many points you earn because you got a headshot. Like, just all sorts of stuff. Some role player yelled at me when playing that, and I never turned it on again, Trash says in the chat. Fair enough.
Was he yelling in German?
He probably was, yeah. It is funny, I will say. There is, like, proximity chat and team chat and squad chat, how some people are role-playing it. And you'll be playing, and, like, when you're playing as the Germans, it's funny, but it's not. They're role playing, but they're like screaming things that Germans would have been screaming. Maybe not in World War One. Is it? I can't even remember if it's World War One or World War. Either way, some of the role play is pretty funny. Some of it's less than funny. But yeah, there's definitely some people who are like, "You're supposed to be doing this. This is your role." And it's like, "I'm in a war, dude, and I've never played this before. Give me a break." But it's fun. I'm having a good time with it. But it's not a game that I can play all the time. Because this is a kind of game that if I really wanted to, I could just get sucked into. And he told me about this other game that has like month long wars that you fight. And, you know, people hop in and out and everything, of course. But basically, you're playing the same campaign for like an entire month live. And I'm like, that could be real dangerous for me because I could really get sucked into like a war simulator type of thing. But I'm sure I'll go back and play that some more. But he really wanted to play it and didn't have anybody to play with. So he just sent me a copy, and that was really nice of him. And then the last thing is Jusant. Jusant is a game that I have actually finished. I started playing it 2 nights ago, and I finished it probably in 6 hours total. And along with that, I got the 100% completion on Xbox, the 100% gamer score. It's on Game Pass. Jusant is a super, the way I'm going to describe it, is vibey game. Very calm and feeling sedate. The whole game is about climbing, and you're climbing the whole time. There isn't much more description than that. You're climbing, and of course different things come into play. Of course you have you can just grip the rocks with your hands, and then you have ropes that are all sorts of technical terms that I don't remember because I'm not a rock climber. And then you have to do some swinging, and you do some like jumping on these magical beings, and it's really fun. It's super chill, and very like trying to be super artsy. And I'm not saying trying to be as in a negative context, like it is super artsy. And the story of the game is there, but you don't get a lot of it unless you're reading all of the but you don't get any of it actually, unless you're reading the all the collectibles and everything, which is part of the reason I went and found all the collectibles, because I wanted to know what was going on. And I did that, and I still wasn't really sure what was going on until the very end. But normally that would take away my enjoyment of a game, is that not having a decent story at all. But for this one, it totally didn't matter, because it was more about, you know, the vibe and the experience of it. This kind of reminds me of a game like Grease, however you want to pronounce it. I don't remember the right way. And so I texted Dave, because I know he always raves about that one, and I thought it was great too, but and told him I thought it would be a good game for him. It's just a good chill out game, and there's some frustrating parts in it, but ultimately just really relaxing, I guess you could say. And I would definitely recommend playing it with a controller. I do not think there's a way that you could play this feasibly on mouse and keyboard, just because, you know, the triggers alone enabling you to climb quickly are really nice. But yeah, I would give it a shot. It's on Game Pass, so if you have Game Pass, definitely check it out. I think it's also on other platforms as well, but I really enjoyed it. And there was only, I finished the game, and then I looked, and there was only one achievement I hadn't gotten, and I was like, so I looked up how to go get it, and it was super easy. I could have done it in the moment, but didn't, and it took me maybe 5 minutes, so. Yeah, that's what I've been playing this week. Kind of a large assortment of things, but very relevant to my interest. And that's all we got for the show. Thank you, boys, for joining me. Appreciate it. It'd be weird to have to do the show by myself.
You could do it.
I could do it. I don't want to do it. I don't mind streaming by myself from time to time, but I don't want to do this by
myself. I'd watch. Just Ben IRL.
Yeah. Cool. Dude. That's a thought. All right. Thanks again, everybody out there, for listening or watching. We appreciate it. You can find us on Discord at handsomephantom.com/Discord. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/handsomephantom. And if you want to watch us live streaming on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m., you can do that over at Ben is Handsome YT on YouTube. We'll stick around for just a few minutes to figure out the title of the show and all that kind of stuff, and then we'll be heading out. But we appreciate you being here, and we will see you later.
The HP Podcast is made possible by our patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following patrons are at the $5 level or above: Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Jared, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Rainick, Christian Snow, Gravelicious, Benji Bop, and Johnny Waffles.